This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Here we go.
Jackson over the middle, caught by Hollywood Brown. See you later, Hollywood, to the house.
Jackson, the spin and toss. Ingram makes a man miss. Diving. Touchdown. What an effort.
Russell Wilson's first pass to Metcalf. And Metcalf had it, lost it, and is picked up by the Ravens. And running in is Marlon Humphrey for the touchdown.
There's a second down and three. Jackson takes it himself. Look at him turn back and forth. Oh, he broke his ankles. Now he's got an entourage, and he's got a touchdown. He is Houdini. What a play. 47-yard touchdown run by the magical quarterback, Lamar Jackson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Like a Raven. We are back 1 week after recording our mock draft. We have all the NFL draft results to talk about. So many picks to discuss that are going to be new Baltimore Ravens. I'm Antonio Barbera. Very excited to get into the deep analysis of who the future all pros that the Ravens drafted this past week. And I'm joined by my co-hosts. First of all, on the East Coast, Tim Horsey. Tim, how's it going, man?
Oh, you know, another late April, early May, another excuse for me to get way too excited about every single player that the Ravens picked being, at the very least, a solid contributor, which we know isn't the case, but I've hyped myself up on basically all these picks that we're going to talk about today. Eric DaCosta does it again, so I am feeling fantastic.
And on the West Coast, Jace Evans. And I'm going to take 10 seconds here to just say something that's really, it's the what's bothering Antonio. I know this is a podcast, this is not visual, but we talk about it most weeks. Jace Evans has shaved everything, really, just shaved. The hair is gone, the long hair is gone. The handlebar mustache / facial hair is gone. It's a clean cut, new look summer, Jace. And I don't like it. I'm gonna be honest. I enjoyed the Gardner Minshew more, but but how are you feeling about the Ravens draft results?
Draft, I'm feeling good, Antonio. As for the hair, it was time. It'd been over, I think, 14 months, something like that, 14 months. So it just, you know, summer, cut it short, like the Ravens. New beginnings with a new draft class. Very excited. As Tim said, a lot to be excited about, I think. I think we'll get into it. An intriguing draft, first draft in 3 years. The Ravens have had two first-round picks, and the first draft in many years where they entered the night with already having two picks. So there's no shortage of things to talk about. We watched the first round together and had myriad emotions about it, and I think just based on our pre-show conversations, I think some of our thoughts have changed a little bit. So I'm excited to kind of discuss our initial thoughts and then what we moved into, all that. So very excited. Draft's always a fun time of year.
We are going to get into the NFL stuff and the news and notes that happened across the league in the second half of this episode, because this is a Ravens podcast. So we're just going to dive right in with their picks and get into it with the first selection the Ravens made. We were all clamoring for a playmaker, hoping for a wide receiver, and it does happen at 27 with Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. I turned to you guys. All three of us were doing a live Zoom during the pod together, or I should say during the draft together. And I think all three of us were pretty hype when Bateman fell to the Ravens. What do you guys think of his fit in Baltimore?
I love it. I think we, to give ourselves some credit, we mocked this pick correctly. It was one of our correct ones. And I think just because, you know, in a perfect world, would the Ravens have had a chance at Ja'Marr Chase, perhaps? Yeah, that would be ideal. That would be great if that was in play. But it wasn't. So I think in terms of the guys who were going to be around, I think you got the best receiver available, an area definitely of need. And I think, you know, we see what some of these teams are doing. We talked, I believe, last week about, you know, what all the pieces the Chargers brought in for Justin Herbert, and they continue to do that in this draft. We look at what the Chiefs are putting around Patrick Mahomes, which they continue to do in this draft, and with the Orlando Brown trade. The Ravens need to build around Lamar Jackson, and this was the offseason to do it after they kind of didn't really last offseason, coming off their very successful 2019. So I love it. I think Bateman just brings such I think he's just like such the perfect receiver they were needing. Greg Roman said, I don't know if this was today or as we record or just in the last few days, but he said, the thing that hits my brain is right place, right time when I think about Rashad Bateman here with the Ravens, because I think he brings a style that is really going to complement the guys who are here right now. And I think that's perfect because Bateman can play inside. He can play outside. He just does a lot of stuff well. Per Pro Football Focus, Bateman was the top rated receiver in the Big Ten since 2019 overall, and was third by PFF's count since 2019 in explosive plays behind Ja'Marr Chase and Devonta Smith, who just won the Heisman. Chase won every single receiving award in 2019. So that's pretty good company. So to get a player like that at 27 who is versatile, who does make these plays and can help Lamar in ways that the guys that aren't on the team right now do, I think that's great. I really love the pick. I was very satisfied and legitimately a little surprised based on some of the players on the board that the Ravens did go with kind of the splashier receiver pick versus, you know, a very Ravens pick would have been just taking a Tevin Jenkins right at that spot. But they went with the receiver to help Lamar, and I was very pleased with that.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, we don't have a big physical guy who can dominate a corner on the slant and pick up those 4 yards on third and three. That's what part of Bateman's game. And the thing is about Bateman's game, and this is according to Nate Tice from the Athletic Football Show, an incredibly smart film junkie guy that you should listen to when he speaks. First of all, he had Bateman as the second best receiver in this class behind Devontae Smith, over Ja'Marr Chase, over Jalen Waddle, over Elijah Moore and some other guys. And the fact that the Ravens, like Jace said, second receiver in what, 3 seasons now in the first round that they've picked. And you look at that room, Hollywood Brown, Sammy Watkins, Rashad Bateman, Devin DuVernay, James Prochet, and I put Miles Boykin way down the list. I'm not a huge fan of his, but that's a good room to pack in with Mark Andrews and Nick Boyle as well. Like, that is the... There's no more of this discourse of Lamar doesn't have the weapons, which is something we'll get to. He has the weapons now. And I think Bateman, he does everything well for guys who, and you know, to a degree ourselves, obviously we aren't like big, super break down all the film draft guys. So you read these guys who are smarter than you in this department, and you like to look for comps. Here are some of the comps that Rashad Bateman has gotten from Nate Tice and others. Allen Robinson, Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas, and Reggie Wayne, guys who might not blow you out of the water with speed, might not be these super massive imposing figures, but play bigger than their size, play faster than their 40 time, and do everything a receiver needs to do incredibly well. I mean, look, the guys saw me on the Zoom. It was what, like midnight? And I immediately leaped out of my chair and started screaming.
Which, there was yelling.
Yeah. Which is a little bit of a problem. I know I need to curtail just a bit, especially living in a tiny studio apartment here in Washington, D.C. But there's something about this pick where everybody wanted it to happen. analysts were thinking that it would just be a great move. And you just have this doubt because you're like, you know, the Ravens do need some offensive line help. The Ravens do love drafting defensive ends, and a bunch of them are still there, and we'll get to one in just a second. And they went with, you know what, let's help our quarterback in the best way possible, getting this receiver who so many people rate really highly. I'm steamed up. And I have to say it, the number zero is awesome, but I was going to be really upset if he came into the league number zero. It's been confirmed on Monday. Rashad Bateman will be wearing number 12, a la former Jacoby Jones, who we'll get to, don't worry. So I like the number fit too. I think that works. I can't wait. Sammy Watkins, Hollywood Brown, Rashad Bateman, Mark Andrews with J.K. Dobbins in the backfield. Like, guys, that's really good. That is really, really good if everything projects as it should be. So I'm very excited. The one thing, and Antonio, before you go, the one thing I do worry about, and it's been talked about a lot, and Nate Tice, who I'll reference a bunch here because I really respect his opinions, did like a gif of just kind of like being, it was a Simpsons gif of being hung up in a prison cell or something, but kind of smiling, like me thinking about Rashad Bateman going to the Ravens, but then thinking of Greg Roman's passing offense, which has been called middle school by a lot of people. They've mentioned how it needs to improve, and Greg Roman himself has said it's going to be even more of a change than it was from, 2019 to 2020. It's going to be even more of a change here in 2021. We have to see that come true, and maybe some of the coaches they brought in will help that, but remains to be seen. All the potential in the world is there. The fit makes perfect sense. Now they have to curtail the offense to help out a little bit too, I think.
I mean, some great points all around. I love, Tim, I love the room now. I love the offensive love skill the room. Position room, and we hated it 6 weeks ago. I hated it 6 weeks ago because of how thin I thought it was. I don't have, you know, I'm not going to add too much of what you guys have already said describing Bateman, but he's a proven possession receiver. We are not going to have concerns. It's not like he's not the guy where it's, well, look, he's got that crazy speed. It's just a matter of whether he can locate the ball and bring it in. Like, that's just the thing that we need to figure out. That is not his MO. He's got the hands, he's got the route running, and that's what we need. In a weird way, we don't need the superstar wide receiver. We need the small game-changing wide receiver, as Tim mentioned, the third and fours. And it just seems like the perfect type player for that exact play and situation that last year the Ravens just did not have when you double teamed Mark Andrews and forced Lamar to stay in the pocket if you could. So it's a great pick. It's a proven receiver that was mocked to the Ravens all over the place, including in Pod Like a Ravens mock first round. And it's a great fit. And I'm looking forward to the number 12, Tim, and not the number zero catching slants and turning 3 yard catches into 10 yard gains on third and six. In the other direction, with the second pick in the first round, which I think maybe we were most excited that it was a player that the Ravens drafted and not a trade back at that point, but the Ravens certainly going not in an opposite direction, but in a different direction. They go defensive. They go with a much more of a talent that needs to be refined, that needs to be worked on, but explosive abilities in I'll call him Jason Owe first, and now change it to Odafe Owe, which is apparently that was his first name growing up, but he went by Jason for a while and is now going to go back to the OG Odafe Owe, linebacker out of Penn State. The red flag, everybody's talked about it. We all know it. Zero sacks last season, and he's an edge guy who is going to try to be getting sacks in the NFL now, where the competition is just a little stiffer. I was not as so. I'll peek behind the curtain here for the listener. All three of us have, I think, our opinions changed about Owe three or four different times in the last few days. I don't know how excited I am. I love a guy with upside. Great. I watched some of the game highlights, game tape of his after they drafted him. And so you look for his toughest competition, which would have been the Ohio State games. That's where he's going against the highest caliber of offensive linemen. And he, in my opinion, struggled mightily against Ohio State's left tackle for 95% of the game. He looked a little hesitant as a pass rusher. He sort of did the starting to run at Justin Fields, and then as soon as it looked like Fields may throw, he stopped and put his hands up instead of continuing to run or at least try to close down the angle. And I'm a little wary that these kind of these little mistakes that are made by players without a ton of experience or a ton of refinement are going to rear their ugly head in the NFL. So I turn to my two co-hosts, who I think their opinions maybe were positive, negative, but then positive again. So I'm going to turn to them to make me feel better about what OA is going to bring as a first round pick for the Ravens.
So like you on draft night, I was not exactly enamored with the pick. I think I even said in the lead up to the pick that OA was the only guy on the board that I wasn't really excited about. You know, we were Aziz Ojulari was still there, who we became enamored with. Tevin Jenkins was still on the board.
We fell in love with Aziz Ojulari over the course of about 15 minutes in a ridiculous way.
Yeah. Tevin Jenkins similarly still on the board. Trayvon Moehrig was still around. Some of these guys we weren't entirely sure would be there were. And then they selected OA. And I will admit, I was not exactly enthused about a team desperately in need of pass rush help. Drafting a pass rusher without any sacks against major competition. And it was a weird season, we should say. He did have sacks in 2019. But still, the most recent season he put out there, he did not get to the quarterback once in their five or six games, however many they played. And the other thing I guess I will say with Owe that concerned me was all the other when he got drafted, all the highlights that like the Ravens account showed, that a lot of the show like ESPN and stuff showed, was what he did not against competition, just running the 40-yard dash and running cones. And I go both ways on this. On the one hand, I'm like, well, it's probably not good that his highlights are not football related.
That's like the Nathan Peterman Bills Twitter account when he was named the starting quarterback and it was like his warm-up throws before preseason games. Yeah.
So that concerned me a little. I was like, uh-oh, there's not a lot of football highlights to show. But the counterpoint is the physical highlights they did show off are amongst the best ever seen, like, since they've really been tracking this stuff in the last, you know, however many dozen years or so, when they really, really drilled down into it. He is one of the most athletic players that has come into the draft at his size. He's 6'5", 257, and he ran a 4.3940 at his pro day, which is
like, what,
mind-blowing. So my hope, and what I've started to, I don't want to say cling to, but my hope is a franchise like the Ravens, who has developed players, you know, Matthew Judon, fifth round pick, Za'Darius Smith, later round pick as well, these guys who, you know, have become good pass rushers in the NFL, to how great they are, that's to be debated. Za'Darius Smith certainly a lot more successful, I'd say, than Matt Judon, but I think when you take a developmental guy like this, I have a little more faith in the team, in a team like the Ravens, turning him into something. And I hang hopes on that. I think Wink's a creative guy. I think he will find advantages to ways to take advantage of his athleticism and his physicality, and all his athletic gifts, and just find a way to help him get to the quarterback. Because, you know, Lord knows the team needs it. So I've come around on it a bit. I will say I still have some reservations, but I certainly feel better about the Ravens developing him, just because the athletic gifts are so insane that if he could like stay healthy, it's like they seem like they have to translate some way. Like, he's like too talented to not have some minor level of success at the very least. And if you want to look at it, maybe this is rationalizing it. This was their second first round pick. So if you say we only had one, our first pick, we drafted Rashad Bateman, you can kind of take a flyer on a guy, with a little more risk. And I think that's, you know, we mentioned some of the differences. I think that you started to see from Eric DaCosta, with Eric DaCosta running the show versus Ozzie Newsome primarily in charge. We mentioned two receivers in 3 years. That was unheard of, would have been unheard of in the Ozzie era, drafting that many receivers in that short a period of time in the first round. And then taking a kind of project guy. Like the Ravens, I feel like under Ozzie, for good or worse, for better or worse, would draft proven things. But it definitely seems like, especially in this draft, and a guy we'll talk about a little later, a lot more projecty guys, a lot more athletic freaks that they seem to be gravitating to. And it's just kind of interesting to look at that kind of dynamic and the differences between the two GMs.
Yeah, and I think part of that could have been the COVID season too. So like if a guy doesn't produce as well in this 2020, you just say, eh, throw it out. We know what he is as an athlete. First of all, your point on Wink is great. Side note, I know it's over. If you haven't watched the Ravens hype up video before the draft, watch it. It features a lot of our favorite man, Wink Martindale, including a quote that said, lock the gates, burn the ships. It's going down at the bank, which I mean, yes, yes, please. Let's go. In terms of Ed, I've heard Adafe Owe, you know, we'll see what it actually comes out with the pronunciation guides. But with Owe, you love that when that pick gets made, a lot of Twitter and a lot of, you know, the analysts and stuff go, how did the Ravens get this guy? How did DaCosta pick this guy to plug him in immediately to Baltimore's defense and to Wink Martindale's system? I think Wink Martindale's looking at this dude and going, yeah, we'll find a way to get him to the quarterback. You're telling me he runs a 4-3? We'll open up some lanes so that he's got a clear one to just hit Ben Roethlisberger right in the face mask over and over and over again. The other thing to think about, too, you talk about drafting tendencies. Yes, the Ravens have been relatively successful finding these late-round guys, but that's no guarantee. You know, as much as we love to say sack daddy, that guy hasn't really turned out yet so far in terms of Jalen Ferguson in 2019. This is the first pass rusher that they've drafted in the first round since T. Sizzle in 2003. So if they feel like a position that they don't usually give a first-round grade to, or, you know, the board falls as it may, whatever. And remember with this pass rushing class, a lot of questions about everybody, even our favorite Azeez Ojulari. That guy had some late injury stuff pop up that people, it scared a lot of people away, maybe including the Ravens, or maybe they just didn't have him drafted as highly. I think in a class like this, where the biggest ding from this guy is, yeah, the sack numbers weren't there and he might be a little raw, but we know we have the coaching staff to develop in. I think you take that guy. And I know, I'm singing a different tune than I usually do about you need sacks, you need sacks, you need sacks. And I think at the next level, he does need to produce that. But I think they saw enough from him in college and in that ridiculous workout, which our outside linebackers coach said was the best workout he's ever seen live, and it wasn't even close. You take that guy and you put him into the defense. Those talents, by the way, those talents already and what he does physically and the tape that he put on, he's already a good run defender. Like that part of his game is there. He's going to set the edge. He's going to allow guys like Patty Queen to run in there into the gaps and make plays. So you're telling me Calais Campbell disrupting guys inside. Derek Wolfe, who according to PFF was great at stopping the run already, disrupting guys. Don't forget Brandon Williams. Maybe Justin Madubuke gets some in the defensive line. And then Owe setting the edge to bring everything back to those mammoths. That right there already entices me. I know sack, sack, sacks, getting to the quarterback is obviously important. But the fact that this guy already has that one trait that we know. And then don't forget, he's a physical freak. He is an absolute monster in the best way possible. I have faith. And trust me, I am singing a different tune. I was way more Antonio Barbera on Thursday night. I have faith that this coaching staff can get the most out of him, especially with all their quotes, which, you know, it's a little bit of tongue in cheek, or not tongue in cheek, but they don't reveal all their secrets, obviously. But DaCosta said after the first round, yeah, the board fell the way we wanted it to. Like, we got the two guys we wanted. That makes me pretty excited. Call me a homer. I'm sitting here with two of my good friends talking about the Ravens draft picks. I'm going to be positive, but there's something about it where I can just see this guy in 3 years is posting 10 sack seasons, 10 sack season, 10 sack season. And people are going, why did we let the Ravens draft a dude like this? Why? Why? Because he's just getting after Baker Mayfield constantly. He's getting after whoever the hell is playing quarterback after next year for Pittsburgh. He's disrupting Patrick Mahomes. And that's the other thing. You know, I know these are the early picks. We're going to rant a little bit on the early picks. Don't worry. This is not going to be a 4-hour episode. The one word that you keep hearing about him is disruption. He's constantly making a mess for offenses. He's constantly getting in the face of the quarterback, going after the running back. And he could become, as the SB Nation article put it, an apex predator with the right coaching in this defense. And I mean, come on, you got to love that. You got to.
The one final thing I think we should say about him too, is he's only been playing football since 2016. And is now in the NFL.
Even better.
Yeah. It now being his full-time job. This is all he's working on, you know, working with, watching the film, working out. This is his job. This is all he's going to be doing, is football related activities. And it has his sole focus. I like, you know, I don't know obviously a ton about his personality, but by all accounts, he seems like a pretty nice guy, hard worker and stuff. And so, if, you know, if he just works hard at it, you like to hope doing it full time, you just kind of naturally get better at it. Now, something you've only been doing for 5 years. So, you know, I like that aspect of it too. And as Tim said, he did have 20 pressures last year, despite his none sacks, which was a, you know, a little, as we said, it is a red flag. ESPN said his zero sacks were the fewest among a first-round defensive end or outside linebacker in the last 25 years. So that's not great. But I do think there's enough positives that I definitely feel a lot better about this selection. And then seeing guys like Ojulari fall, as Tim mentioned, and that, which was interesting. So for me, the pick kind of came down to, they liked what his potential and what he could be versus maybe what might be more of a sure thing, like a Tevin Jenkins. That'd be like the one guy, or I think that the Ravens passed on, that I think maybe could really come back to bite them in any significant way. Cause I think he has the potential to be a great right tackle in the NFL, but you know, if Owe becomes a great pass rusher, it's a non-issue. So I'm definitely a lot higher on it than I was just a few days ago.
Those were the last 10 minutes were on the psychiatrist's couch with Antonio Barbera, with my two co-hosts. Thank you very much. I do feel better. The thing that I like of this is his ability to set the edge and his ability to stop the run, because that's sort of a worst case scenario. You still have a guy who's proven to be good at this in a division where you're going to have to play Nick Chubb twice. You have to play the future Steelers running back Najee Harris twice. You're going to play Derrick Henry at least once a year, seemingly maybe twice. I like having a stout run stopper on the edge, a big athletic guy like that that has to take down these really powerful running backs. And then the other side of it, this is this is going to look bad in 2 years, so don't record this and play this back for me, but the comp for me with a guy like this, weirdly, is like DK Metcalf. Like, if his jumping out of the gym numbers and athletic ability in these tests and drills for a guy whose college career is, you know, pretty good. None of DK Metcalf's Ole Miss numbers were really strong, but then he had the combine and people thought, oh my goodness, but he dropped because of the injury concerns. He dropped because of the college stats. If Owe does develop, does become this 10 sacks per season edge guy, you're exactly right, Tim, that with the Ravens getting him with their second pick in the first round, all these teams are going to be annoyed, scratching their heads. And they're going to think, why have we let another guy who had all the tools clearly go to the Ravens and get Pro Bowls as a pass rusher, which would be nice. The Ravens, the other thing we thought they were going to do was trade back and grab at least one second round pick. They did not do that. Took the two first rounders and thus did not then trade up. So had no second round picks, and they just sat and they sat patiently and they waited for the third round to address what was literally need number three. They addressed need one, two, and three with their first three picks. And this third pick in the third round is the guard out of Georgia, Ben Cleveland. And I'm just going to give Tim is our in the trenches guy. So I'm just going to turn this pick over to Tim. Tim, I'm going to assume that you're into the only thing you won't like about Ben Cleveland is that his last name is Cleveland, but everything else looks pretty good.
It's legitimately the only thing I don't like. He's gone viral on social media for looking like the Mountain from Game of Thrones. He's 6'6", 357 pounds, and just dominates dudes when you look at the film. I highly encourage you to look up Brian Baldinger's evaluation of this guy. He's got pretty quick feet. The technique isn't always there, but he's done a lot of the pooling systems that the Ravens use, and he's going to be playing next to Ronnie Stanley in pass protection, so you think he's going to be okay there. And if you don't love that, listen to this answer from his interview with ESPN's Alyssa Lang on how he got the nickname, and just a great nickname, Big Country.
That was my high school O-line coach. I'm sure everybody's heard the story of me, shooting a squirrel one day when I played hooky from school.
For those who don't know the story, can you give it to us in like 30 seconds?
So I stayed home from school one day, played sick, you know how we did whenever we were real young. And anyway, I got to looking and didn't have no food in the house. So I looked across the backyard and there was two squirrels in the tree. So I got my .22 and I shot them from the tree and I cooked them up, and that was it. Whenever mama came home, there was a couple of squirrel skins on the porch. And you know, that's been one of my funnest stories that's ever been released on me since I've, been through this whole recruiting and college football deal. That's kind of the one that just kind of gets people going. So
I feel like that's a proud thing to be able to say. Like, as a teenager, you just were like, I'm hungry, I'm going to go take care of myself.
Oh, no doubt. That's what we were raised doing, so that's what I was going to do.
Did you already know how to cook squirrel? Like, I'm not very good in the kitchen anyway, and I would have no clue how to cook squirrel, but did you, like, Google it, or how did that process go?
You know, it's kind of hard to mess up stuff on the grill, so, I mean, if you get too worried about it, you just put it on the grill until it feels done and looks done, and then you just try it and see where it goes.
I mean, look, I've never had squirrel before, but... A man after my own heart. Of as soon as I heard that, I was like, the last guard that we drafted in the third round ended up driving his camper from Iowa to the Ravens facility. He worked out by working on a farm and tossing hay bales, and that guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. Now, look, I'm not setting that expectation here for Ben Cleveland, but you can't help but feel some of the similarities. Obviously, he's bigger. He's a mountain of a man at 6'6", 357 pounds. But he plays mean. Remember the thing that he's talked about, Yanda? Put him in between the white lines and he wants to kill you. Ben Cleveland is the same way, and I say that with the utmost respect. He wants to kill the man in front of him. I watched some tape of him because, of course, I didn't watch any other tape of anybody else. But as soon as Ben Cleveland gets on there, I'm like, I need this in my life. Of him against Christian Barmore, who went to the New England Patriots in the second round that everybody thought was kind of a steal. And he's eating him alive. He's eating the Alabama defensive tackle alive, pushing him off the line, sealing him off the edge, hitting him, and then getting to a combo block. There was another piece of film from that Alabama game in pass protection where Patrick Surtain is coming from a blitz. Ben Cleveland drops back in pass protection, sees him coming, and is able at 6'6", 357 pounds, let me reiterate it again, is able to get there over in time and knock Surtain out of the way to protect his quarterback. This came through, and Quinn Meyerns, the Wisconsin Whitewater guard, was still there. And the story, the story about him, practicing his technique on a log and then, chopping down trees in a workout video and playing with his belly out at the Senior Bowl, I would have been waxing as poetic as I am right now if they picked that guy. And admittedly, I didn't know as much about Ben Cleveland. But as soon as they picked him, everything you saw was just like, there's your left guard for the next 10 years. There he is. I honestly, there's probably negatives. Maybe I've just refused to see them. I've literally put blinders on just to look at the positives. But I look now, Stanley, Ben Cleveland, Big Country, Bradley Bozeman at center, Kevin Zeitler at right guard, remember that. And then whichever one of these right tackles that they sign. Remember, as we record this, the window is now open for them to sign free agents without losing comp picks. So expect one of Alejandro Villanueva, Dennis Kelly, Mitchell Schwartz, whoever it be, to be signed by the Ravens, as everybody's been linking that. And it might have happened by the time you listen to this. Who knows? After losing Orlando Brown, who is a great player, that looks pretty good to me. And this, as you can tell, I think my favorite pick in this draft.
Yeah, Tim certainly probably watched even way more film than I did after this pick was made. But
he's murdering dudes on a football field. It's incredible.
Well, that's what I love, Tim. You mentioned Meyerns
or something. Yeah.
But Ben Cleveland was a like mainstay basically the last few years on the Georgia offensive line, one of the biggest offensive lines in college football. I believe they are currently the biggest. So what I love about him, you know, you worry sometimes, it's like, can these guys hold up against the sides in the NFL trenches? I don't think you have that worry with a guy who's enters the league at 6'6", 357. Like, that's just incredible. And so to bring that size and, you know, to play, no disrespect to a guy like Myers, but, you know, D3 Wisconsin Whitewater, he might be a great product, but when you play for Georgia, you're playing the best of the best. As you said, defending very well against Christian Barmore's pass rushes and stuff. So I'm just very, you know, it's hard to be too excited about a guard in the third round, but I'm pretty excited for a guard in the third round. I think, as you said, he seems like he'll be pretty much the left guard starter from day one and kind of should lock everything into place, assuming they just move Bozeman over and stuff. So very, very excited, very pleased with this pick.
Then just 10 picks later, the Ravens again in the third round, this time going with Brandon Stevens, defensive back out of SMU, who seems, Jace, a bit more maybe of a project in the secondary for the Ravens, but has some talent.
Yeah, so we kind of talked about this with Owe, but another project guy, 6 foot, 213 pounds, intriguing physical tools, actually started his football career as a running back at UCLA before transferring and to SMU and changing positions. So, you know, you can never have too much cornerback depth, I don't think, at this point in the NFL, as we discussed at length on and off last season, as guys just continued to get hurt and banged up and stuff. And so, similarly, I think he's a guy they like his athletic profile. And they took a chance. And it's interesting with him that he is actually the only non-power conference guy the Ravens drafted in this entire draft. So they clearly must have liked something about his physical makeup or what they saw on the tape. Via Jeff Zrebeck from The Athletic, Eric DeCosta said, focusing a lot of attention on big school guys was partly because of COVID-19's impact on the college football season. Made scouting more difficult and created more unknowns. So they kind of just shied away from small school guys in this draft, it seems. But, yeah, clearly they saw enough with Stevens that they liked. I honestly can't say I know too much else about him. Wasn't as glued in on SMU this season as I might be on most years, just how weird it was and them not playing big guys. But, yeah, I mean, I like it as a depth move. As I said, you can never have too much there, so seems good.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to say here. I mean, and we'll make this point with Wade later. That's such a great point that I've heard a lot of people make. Depth at premium positions, corner, offensive line, pass rusher, is very, very important. So this, for me, is the most questionable pick. There were definitely still some more tackles, which Antonio addressed. It was need number three was offensive line. More specifically was tackle. Again, we'll see. Maybe I'm not convinced Villanueva is a starting right tackle, but if it's like a Dennis Kelly or even Mitchell Schwartz, if he stays healthy, God willing, there could have been another need there, but I don't know. Maybe this is Lardarius Webb. I know SMU is a little bit bigger than Nicholls State, but maybe it's something like that. Defended 23 passes, I think, in 23 games, and also had a pick. So yeah, we'll see. Not really a ton to say on Brandon Stevens, though.
You talk about depth, Tim. The Ravens then in the fourth round, double dipping with another wide receiver. They've taken, by my math, at least five in the last 3 years now, maybe even more.
I think I read it's two each of the last three drafts because they took Boykin and Hollywood,
right, Boykin,
Prochet,
that's what I was
Duvernay,
forgetting.
And then this year with
six. My goodness. This one is Tylan Wallace out of Oklahoma State. Big time production there. He had 1,500 receiving yards and 13 touchdowns as a sophomore, and 3,400 receiving yards over his, I mean, basically over 3 years. He had 3,300 receiving yards in his last 3 years with Oklahoma State. I think he even had a potential first round draft grade in his junior year, but then tore his ACL late in that season. Which hurt his stock. And you know, I don't want to speculate on an ACL tear impacting a player's burst and quickness and speed, because I can't, you know, obviously I don't have that sort of expertise and I haven't seen it myself, but the draft stock certainly fell after that ACL tear because he had a fairly strong senior season and a 1.1% drop rate last year, which was second best in all of FBS. I'm weirdly excited about this guy. I think he's got a lot of potential, but the issue for him is going to be, I can't believe I'm saying this, the issue for him is not going to be breaking into this deep wide receiver room. You have Hollywood, Sammy Watkins, now Rashad Bateman, Duvernay, Prochet, and Boykin that are all going to at least start the season ahead of him on the depth chart. So he's almost slotted in now as that sixth and last wide receiver on this team. So maybe some special teams work for him or fighting to get ahead of some of those younger wide receivers on the depth chart.
Or it spells the end for a Miles Boykin or a maybe even a James Prochet, who we saw none of really outside of punt returning last year. Were we trying not to spoil the draft when we mentioned the Ravens receiving room before and just didn't put Tylan Wallace in there? Because I think he's a pretty significant piece now. Again, another guy, as Antonio said, sure-handed player like Bateman, technical, efficient route runner, wins balls, physical, competitive. Like, these are all the words you hear about this guy. He's not going to blow you out of the water with speed. The injury might be a little bit of a concern, but the whole good thing is, if there's a 50-50 ball up for grabs, it's his. He's going to make a play on the ball. He's going to bully corners. Why not? Like, it seems like another guy that a lot of people had way higher than he went, like Bateman. Some people had a bit higher than he went, or sort of in that range, maybe like the Colts at 21, something like that. But at the moment, hearing from smart people who, if you go back and listen to them and then look at the production 5 years on or whatever, obviously aren't going to nail every pick. But Bateman and Wallace as your wide receiver back-to-back, my initial reaction when I saw this was, wow, they went receiver again. But then this is clearly what they covet. They're clearly coveting guys who can win one-on-one battles, guys who are precise route runners, guys who catch the ball, funny enough, for a wide receiver. So I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's a little higher. I think he is, if you're looking at the receiver room, like right now, and again, we don't know X and Z and slot and all that stuff, but just take it for what it is. I think you've got Brown, Watkins, Bateman are your three that are going to be on the field the most. Duvernay, and then probably Tylan Wallace if he produces what they think, and leaving Prochet and Boykin out, you know, out to dry a little bit, but another solid pick in my opinion.
I was really excited to see this pick. I didn't really expect it. Didn't really think too much about him still being on the board, but yeah, Tylan Wallace has just been like consistently one of the best receivers in college football the last few years. And he kind of, you know, maybe not exact physical makeup, I can't remember all his numbers, but like, he kind of reminds me almost of a guy like Tyler Lockett, who I don't even think went drafted actually, but was extremely productive at Kansas State. And for some reason, like, it didn't get drafted and then went to Seattle and became one of Russell Wilson's like favorite targets. Like, I think even if Wallace doesn't have the speed, he's not the biggest guy, he's 5'11". I just think he does so much well that you need to do well as a wide receiver that I think he'll be able to find some measure of success. I certainly hope, at least in the NFL. Like Tim said, he does the most important thing a receiver can do, which is catch the ball, pretty much. And even if he can't, you know, create the separation necessarily because of maybe some of his physical limitations, he can catch in traffic. To cite Pro Football Focus again, because they do about as good to deep stats as you can find in the college game. Since his sophomore year in 2018, no player in FBS has pulled in more contested catches than Tylan Wallace. So that's pretty solid. And then and he also had 73 receptions of 15-plus yards, which were the second most receptions in FBS of 15-plus yards in that time. So he was just extremely productive, extremely great when it came to contested catches. And I think I'm really, you know, hard to find any qualms with it as far as fourth round, you know, picks go. I was very excited. I think it's a great pick. And like we said, I mean, I think adding him to the room, I think you have to say Eric DaCosta did his job to improve the weapons. And so now it's down to Greg Roman and it's down to Lamar to show the improvement. And we should say, just to throw it in somewhere, Lamar, fifth year extension has been exercised. So no need to worry about that. The attention now turns to his extension, but you know, they got 2 years until they absolutely need to sign something. So we're across that bridge when they come to it, I suppose. But yeah, the focus is on them now, because I think Eric DaCosta did his best to kind of replenish the cupboard in certain, especially in the wide receiver room.
Lamar's salary will go from like 1.7 million to 22 million. And I think it's still kind of a deal for Baltimore for another season, where he'll end up making maybe twice that per year after 2022. All right. The last three picks that the Ravens made, I'm going to let you guys do a minute or two on what you like from one or more of these guys. Sean Wade, another cornerback out of Ohio State. Dalen Hayes, a defensive end out of Notre Dame. And then Ben Mason, a tight end / fullback out of Michigan. For all you listeners out there, that's right. Another dude who can seemingly do multiple things, where he's just laying his mass into other opposing football players. What do you guys like about these three picks?
I'll just go quickly here, because I know Jace, these are big time programs that Jace watches a lot, so he might have a little bit more to say. I love the Sean Wade pick. Like, I know that guy's name, and I'm not that big of a college football guy. He was potentially a first rounder if he came out last year. He decided not to. He came back. They put him on the outside rather than the slot, and he struggled a little bit. I think he had some injuries as well. But in the slot, as John Harbaugh and DeCosta and all them referenced, he is a slot cornerback for this team. He was dominant. And you know what? Again, outside of the drafting depth at these premium positions, if he's a good slot player, and maybe, you know, to start, he's even Tavon Young's backup in the slot, Marlon Humphrey gets pushed to the outside. And we're not forced to play Marlon Humphrey inside unless they want to. And I think that's something that's a massive benefit for this team, where Marlo can go out and actually lock down receiver number one on the outside if he has to. So I think that's absolutely huge. And then, I mean, look, I'm going to skip Dalen Hayes. I'm apologizing. Jace, we'll get to him. Don't worry, because we have to talk about the man who wore a Make Fullbacks Great Again hat to his video press conference with the Ravens. Where is that? I need that hat now. I needed it yesterday. I needed it before I even knew about it to add to my wardrobe. But look, when the pick first came in, my heart sunk a little bit, because I looked at the contract and I realized that Patrick Ricard is only under contract for one more year with the Baltimore Ravens. This could be his final year with the Ravens. I hate to say it, but Ben Mason also apparently just one of those guys that when the pick was made, it was like, oh yeah, he's going to fit in really well with what they do. You know, didn't catch a lot of balls, but did show some potential for that. And then the Ravens did, when they mentioned drafting him, they mentioned him as a tight end. And you know what that tells me? That tells me they're going back to three tight ends on some sets. They're going back to Nick Boyle and Mark Andrews and Ben Mason, who will simply be there to knock dudes out, which, you know what? We talked about and this is the funny balance. Like, we talk about Bateman. It's like Bateman needs to be super productive. And then I'm also like, yeah, I would love to see them line up with two fullbacks in the backfield and Gus Edwards. Like, yes, please, let's do that. So I think that pick, it has a long-term idea to it, unfortunately, for a Project Pat podcast. But at the same time, I think that there could be some immediate contributions from Ben Mason too, that I'm excited about.
Yeah, I mean, just a fullback from the University of Michigan, where his brother is the head coach, is like one of the most John Harbaugh picks, especially for your final pick of the whole draft. I was over the moon with it. As you said, a little sad, because it probably does spell the end of Patrick Ricard's time in Baltimore in 2022. But that I was very amused by that. And I will say, I love the Sean Wade pick too, Tim, for exactly what you said, because – you know, there are concerns about if he could play outside. The tape was not great for him, as they say. I was reading a 247 article kind of compiled while he was sliding in the draft. And they had this interesting tidbit from Todd McShay. I'll just read off about Wade's 2020 season. McShay said on ESPN's First Draft podcast, "I think he proved he belongs inside. He's a nickel corner. He can play a little free safety. He can move around. He's physical. He's tough. He can tackle in the open field really well. We saw that last night. But he is not cut out, at least at this point, to be a perimeter cover corner that takes away your number one wide receiver. He's just not. But you know what? That's okay, because the Ravens already handsomely paid two guys who do that on the outside and take away your number one and number two corners. So I think if he's able to play in the slot and able to move around and even dabble in some safety, which I think we should say too, they mentioned maybe Brandon Stevens could also play some safety for them. I think that's great. I think the versatility is fantastic, and I think it's okay to draft a guy with a high ceiling. Maybe not a high ceiling, but I'd say like a high floor if you're able to play to his strengths. Like we said, he probably was projected by many to be a first round pick. He's talented. Ohio State listed him at 6'1". So I really like it. I think especially for where they took him. It was fifth round, I believe they took him. So yeah, for like a late round pick, a guy that some people thought just a year ago could be a first round pick, even if, you know, he does have limitations. I think he just so perfectly fills what they need in the depth piece. I really like the move. And then just to touch on Dalen Hayes, two-year starter at Notre Dame, which that counts for something, a major program that played in the college football playoff last year. That's solid. Per Jameson Hensley, two-year starter at Notre Dame, who's considered a developmental pass rusher. He's dealt with shoulder issues. He was in college forever. He had a redshirt season. So not too much to say about him other than, as we said, depth at premium positions. His depth on the defensive line. And I think they need that. I think they showed last year when they had some injuries. It's an older defensive line. And I think that's another benefit to taking a guy like Jason Owe, because everyone else up front outside of, as Tim mentioned, Justin Madubuike is over 30 now. Calais Campbell, Justin Wolf, Brandon Williams. So, just getting younger, getting depth there. I think it's a solid move. And a two-year starter at Notre Dame, I think you can't sneeze at that, even if maybe his pro potential's not over the, like, super great or anything. But I think it's a solid depth move. So, yeah, that's the Ravens draft in a nutshell. That's every pick. It was – generally very pleased, I'd say. Although I will say, as Ravens fans, I think we're spoiled, and I think we leave most drafts pretty pleased as Ravens fans.
The team did get pretty high grades sort of across the media landscape in terms of the overall draft class, but I'm going to instead ask a couple of very, very specific over-unders for you guys quickly. First, let's start with OA because he's sort of the more fun projection guy, but will he have more or less than 4 sacks in the 2021 Ravens season?
I'm going to say over. I was thinking 4, but there's the extra game. So he's got another game to do it, 17 games to do it in. And I think, like, we think of, well, we lost Matt Judon. He had 6 sacks last year, and he was the Ravens' leading sack guy. I don't think it's like, someone has to sack the QB, and if they're putting him in a position to succeed, I think he could get to 4, certainly to 4.5 or 5, I hope. So someone's got to, if he does it, I don't know who does. So it's kind of, yeah, at least hoping, I guess, he gets over 4.
I feel like, oh man. And this is just me being a dumb sports fan, but I feel like if I say yes, he's destined to like fail. And I don't know why I think that, but I kind of do. But screw it. Yeah, he's got. I can't heap praise on him and how he fits in Wink's system and all the disruptiveness, and then not go over. So we're going over. We'll say 4.5, 5, maybe 6. Maybe if he matches Matt Judon's total from last year as a rookie, I'm going to be steamed.
Oh, I mean, the greatest thing in the world is if he just comes out and has like 15.5 sacks. That would be so wonderful.
I'm going to take, with that being said, I'm going to take the under on 4, but in 2 years he gets double digits. That's my hot bet with that. Will Rashad Bateman have more or less than 600 yards receiving? It's the magic number for Ravens skill position guys. Will he get more or less than 600 receiving yards next season for the Ravens?
I'll go quickly, Jace, here. I think it's an easy under. And it's nothing against him. It's just, I'm pulling him up now in terms of receiving yards last year. Marquise Brown, 769. Mark Andrews, 701. Willie Snead, 432. I think he beats that 432 number, but I'm not ready to sit here and say, and maybe it's part of they have so many weapons. Maybe there's so many people to get the ball to now that it maybe is a little bit more evenly distributed. And that's obviously in a perfect world here. But I will go under, and optimistically I'll say only because they're still dominant running the ball and they have so many weapons to throw to now that he's not going to get enough, not getting enough reps, let's say, to get to 600.
I think we're in lockstep here today, Tim, because I was thinking under two. And similarly, I don't think because he'll be bad or anything. I think it'll just be because that's how, even if they change some things, I think that's just kind of how the Ravens operate. And I do think having a guy like Bateman and Greg Roman even talked about this will like increase the chances a guy like Hollywood Brown has. He theoretically will face less double teams. Similarly, Mark Andrews, you have to hope at least he's a little more open over the middle of the field if they have another guy who can actually catch passes over the middle over the middle of the field also around. So I still anticipate Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown being the top two receivers on the team. So I'll go under as well, mainly because of that reason.
I was going to go under 600, but, you know, let's embrace debate here. I'm going to say over. And I'm going to speak for this reason. Hollywood Brown, I just pulled up. This kind of surprised me. As a rookie, he had 584 receiving yards. And that was his first season on the team. He had the, you know, is his foot bothering him? Is his foot not bothering him? I feel like he was in and out of the lineup a bunch when he would take a big hit or something like that. And you have a first-round guy, a super talented guy, and you get a 17th game. I'm saying with all those factors, he ends up with 620 receiving yards next year. All right, Ben Cleveland, is he going to start? Maybe this is not too easy of a question, but will he start more or less than 9 games on the offensive line this season?
Over.
I think it's going to be over too, just because for two reasons. I think he is probably an improvement in theory over Bradley Bozeman, who was like a 7th round pick. I mean, Bradley Bozeman's become a great player, but Bozeman, a natural center, has kind of been playing out of position. And I think more so than even how good Cleveland is, I think they want to move Bradley Bozeman to center. It seems like that's been kind of the scuttlebutt coming out of the rain. They haven't explicitly said that's what's happening, but it sounds like that's what's happening. Because I can't imagine they want Patrick McCarty to be their center opening day next season, or Tristan Colon Castillo. So, assuming they want Bozeman at that center spot, they kind of don't have any other options now other than playing Ben. I guess Ben Powers, perhaps. But I think you spend a third-round pick on a guard, you kind of expect him to play. So I'll go over to
him. I will agree. It'll depend on just how many offensive linemen they sign between now and, what, August 29th of this summer. But, yeah, I'm going to say that his talent makes him play more than 9 games. And then the last one was a bit of a joke, but there were some excellent points made in the notes that I was writing in about this episode. And it's, will Ben Mason start all 16 games at fullback / tight end? And will he be a Pro Bowler this year? So that part's the joke. But Tim, next year?
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, this is still a Project Pat podcast. So I consider that a little bit of an insult, even as a joke. Yeah, I wrote in here. Yes, next year, I think someone's going to, I'm not going to say overpay, but pay Pat Ricard in a time where the Ravens need to pay a bunch of guys. So they're not going to be able to pay Pat Ricard. So he's going to leave. And that's sad, but it's kind of just how the business works. And that's, I think that is 100% why this Ben Mason pick was made. They value a fullback. They know that their one is about to be too expensive for them. So let's go draft another guy. And you know what? He's going to keep the tradition alive in Baltimore. Yes. He will start all 16 games in 2022 and be a Pro Bowler. And then in, what, 4 years, he'll go off into the sunset and they'll draft somebody else.
Pat Ricard, yeah, Jr.
I think Tim just makes such a good point there because, you know, Ricard doesn't get paid too much, but I looked up his contract. He gets $1 million this year. And Ben Mason is going to make significantly less than that the next few next 4 years. So, yeah, I too think Project Pat is his last ride. So let's win a Super Bowl. Give him a ring. Win one for Project Pat. And then he can walk in 2022.
That screams Dan Campbell giving him like a 4-year, $16 million deal. All right. So that's it for the Ravens picks. We're going to do the random Raven quickly and then go to the NFL draft, the Ravenless NFL draft segment. But I'm up this week for the random Raven. So I'm going to kick it off here. This random Raven played on the team for parts of 3 seasons. 2017, 2018, and then part of 2019. He was drafted by the Ravens out of Alabama in the 3rd round after totaling, it's frustrating to see this now, but out of Alabama in the 3rd round after totaling 18 and a half sacks and 27 and a half tackles for loss in his last 2 seasons at Bama while winning a national championship along the way. With the Ravens, he was not able to replicate the same success, playing in only 19 games over those 3 seasons in Baltimore, totaling 16 tackles and 2 sacks. He finished 2019 with the Green Bay Packers and is currently playing in the Canadian Football League. He wore the same number as random Raven legend Josh Bynes. And that is my random Raven for this week. I liked him and I forgot he existed. And seeing those numbers from Alabama frustrates me because why couldn't he do even half of that in the 3 years with the Ravens? With that, we will turn now to the NFL. And you guys, the listeners, you've seen the picks, you know who went in the top 10. So we're just going to kind of go over some things that got our attention, some things we liked or didn't like. And I'm gonna turn to Tim first here. Tim, what was your favorite just bit of the NFL draft this year?
I mean, I know we're supposed to go full NFL, but I'm starting with the Ravens because it wasn't mentioned during our breakdown of the actual picks, but it was a man who announced the picks. And no, it was not Roger Goodell and his just god-awful stupid meme of a chair, which is the thing that I hated the most during this entire draft. So we'll just skip over that one. But it's your friend and mine, Jacoby Jones, who came out to and maybe this is why this is my favorite pick, because it was Jacoby Jones announcing Ben Cleveland to a bunch of Cleveland fans who were booing him the entire way, because they'll always be the little brother. They'll always be the one that we kick down the steps. They're worthless. They're nothing. And this is what he had to say to them.
Hey, look, let me tell you something. Y'all can boo all y'all want, but you got to accept it. I got a ring. It is what it is.
And this was a moment for me. It was late Friday night when this came out, where I watched all of round 2, all of round 3, waiting for the Ravens to finally make their selection. And Jacoby Jones comes out and dances on the stage and then just reminds Cleveland of something that they will never, ever have. And that is a Super Bowl ring. And it was, by the way, this new version of the Cleveland Browns, you get it. You know what I'm talking about. It was just, oh, it was glorious. And just to quickly combine that into the entire Clevelandness of this draft, the first night, Roger Goodell, as he so often does, brings out a bunch of legends from that city so he doesn't get booed that much. He still gets booed, and then in his robotic tones goes, "Hey, give me some more. Yeah, come on, you can be louder." And they try and boo him, and he's announcing with him these legends of the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, Joe Thomas, he never won anything, but sure, fine. Good for him. He's lost a ton of weight. Never won anything. Great offensive tackle, but, you know, there's nothing to show for it. And then they brought out Jarvis Landry, who is the second best receiver, maybe first. Fine, I'll give him that. On this current iteration of the Cleveland Browns, they have either no legends. They don't have enough people to fill, by the way, the 4 slots that were up with Roger Goodell on that stage. They don't have enough people that, one, they don't have enough Cleveland Browns legends, or two, enough people that still want to be associated with the franchise to show up. So they had to drag a current player out and call him a legend. That combined with Jacoby Jones, just, I'm trying to find a PG way to say this. Take an old Cleveland steamer right on top of the entire city during the draft was one of my favorite things of all time.
The Jacoby thing was legendary. And I love actually the second round especially in the second round when they do the like the legends, because it's fascinating to see like who qualifies as a team legend. And, you know, maybe even some Ravens fans would debate Jacoby Jones. I love Jacoby Jones. I think he held a very important place in Ravens history, even though, you know, he was only here for 3 years. But, like,
they don't win a Super Bowl without him.
Yeah, he caught the most important pass in franchise history and then also scored 2 touchdowns in the Super Bowl, one on the longest return ever. So he's a legend in my book. But the dance was fantastic. That was awesome. But then, like, some teams, you know, like the Steelers used, like, Franco Harris. And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. He's Franco Harris, one of the, you know, greatest Pittsburgh Steelers of all time. But then you have teams like the Texans, who I guess you just don't have options. And guys like Andre Johnson, like, openly hate the franchise. So, like, I believe it was, like, Chester Pitts was, like, their legend, like, the former offensive lineman.
I don't know who that is.
I remembered the name. I was like, Chester Pitts. Like, I hadn't heard his name in a long time. So I always like that. That's always a funny part of the draft. And I will say, too, Tim's point, the chair was so bizarre that I didn't even understand the chair until, like, either the next day. At some point, Goodell sat in it, and then I was like, oh, that's supposed to be his chair from the thing last year. Like, I didn't even remember. It was a callback bit to just when he was like sitting in a chair announcing all these picks in 2020 at his house. Like, that's like how bizarre it was. I just didn't even piece it together. I was like, there's fans in the chair. And there was a funny moment. I don't know what round it was, but there was a Ravens fan in the chair, and I actually had to go tell him to go sit down because he was just yelling at the Cleveland fans and being very rowdy on the stage. So I enjoyed that too. Those were my favorite kind of tangential draft bits, I guess you'd say.
As for some of the personnel decisions, the quarterbacks all went just about as early as we thought, with the fourth of the sort of top grouping. Actually, I should say the fifth of the top grouping, Mac Jones going at 15 to the New England Patriots. The Bears taking Justin Fields in a trade with the Giants, who I made a joke on the last episode about how they never trade back. So, of course, the Giants traded back. And I'll get your thoughts on this decision for the Bears. I thought they gave away a lot to move up 9 spots. They had to give up. So they swapped the 20th for the 11th pick with the Giants. They gave the Giants next year's first round pick, plus a fifth rounder this past draft and a fourth rounder in next year's draft. So it's a lot of draft capital, but I suppose if you're the Bears, if Justin Fields works out, whatever, you have a franchise quarterback. What did you guys think of the trade and how he'll fit in with the Bears?
I think it was a steal. I completely disagree with you. I think an extra first and a couple late round picks down the line for a guy that, you know, was probably the biggest enigma of the draft, but there were so many people in his corner like, no, just pick him. He's good. Like, what are we doing? There was a lot of that, some discourse reacting to the discourse on Justin Fields. And for a franchise like the Bears, I mean, the joke has been made. Go look at their Instagram right now. As you know, your Instagram tiles, like the first 9 you see on your profile page, I believe it's the latest 12 posts on Instagram are all just pictures of Justin Fields or videos of Justin Fields. Like, they're very happy that Justin Fields is there in Chicago. He might be the best quarterback in franchise history already outside of Jim McMahon. Like, it could be argued. It could be argued. And all he has to do is maybe win like a playoff game. I thought it was a super cool moment. Obviously, we're all watching it together. It seemed inevitable that Justin Fields was going to the Patriots, and then Matt Nagy came down and Ryan Pace came down like these angelic figures trading up to steal him away from the New England Patriots, who ended up getting a cyborg in Mac Jones. But I honestly do not think that's – I think they could have given up way more. I think whoever was at 11, apologies, I can't remember. It was the Cowboys. Giants. Or the Giants, sorry, you're right, because Dave Gettleman finally traded down. Right. I think the Giants probably could have asked for way more in that spot. I think it's arguably the pick of the draft, getting Fields at 11 there. I think it's great for them.
I see both sides of it because I think it is a lot to give up. But I will say, if you're Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, you don't really care about the Bears' future first-round picks because if Fields doesn't work, you're going to get fired anyway. So who cares that the GM next year doesn't have a first-round pick, I guess. That being said, I love Justin Fields. I really like Justin Fields. I probably would have taken him second overall, honestly, if I was these were my things to do. But the one thing I worry about is, like, is he going to be the guy that breaks, as Tim mentioned, the Bears' literal decades of futility at quarterback? Until Cutler passed all their marks, their all-time leading passer was Sid Luckman, who retired in something like 1952 or something. So that's not great. And I worry just about the Bears ruining Justin Fields because I want him to succeed. So that's my only real negative is I like the idea of the Bears trading up, but the entire history of the Bears suggests this will not work out. They traded up for Mitch Trubisky, as we famously remember just a few years ago. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's really fair. And it's just one of those franchises that, like, I don't know. I kind of have a soft spot for the Bears. Like, you know, and like
they're Ravens West in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways they are. The Ravens have been a little bit more successful. Yeah,
with more titles.
Right. But
recently.
But it's like one of those teams that I just, you know, defense, you know, tough grittiness, and they needed a win. And that looks like a major win, and I think it's good. This just came across as I'm, you know, just constantly addicted to Twitter, even as we record this show. This came from NFL and ESPN. Courtney Cronin, who is the Minnesota Vikings reporter for ESPN, said the Vikings had told Kirk Cousins and were prepared to take Justin Fields at number 14 if he was still there. So it looks like we would have been saved anyway. He was going to the NFC North anyway, but good on the Bears. I mean, they probably didn't know that. Maybe they had some intel, but good on the Bears to even snatch him from a division rival.
Some other small notes that I had from the first round. There was some cool teammate pairings. I cannot remember there being this many in a first round. Joe Burrow gets his LSU teammate, Jamar Chase. They did some stuff when they were together at LSU. My goodness. Tua gets Jalen Waddle, who to quickly go over our mock draft recap, was one of the, I mean, quote unquote mistakes. We had Devonta Smith ahead of Jalen Waddle, but Waddle going in the top 10, and he goes to Miami with Tua. Jalen Hurts gets Devontae Smith, his teammate. They'll be playing in Philly, and then Trevor Lawrence drafted first, and then Travis Etienne, his running back from Clemson. They will be on the same Jags offense from day one. And then the maybe the strangest pick of the first round, and just, boy, the Raiders have done this more than once in the last few years, and they take tackle Alex Leatherwood at 17, which it's fine. But many boards, Jace, had Leatherwood like in the 40s, in the 50s, in terms of where he should have been drafted, and he goes in the top 20 to Las Vegas instead of, you know, maybe trade back and get the same exact guy even 10 or 20 picks later. But no, they take him at 17, and he's going to be their starting tackle.
Yeah, Mike Mayock seems to, now that Gettleman has finally traded down, it might be the Raiders are the new team that doesn't trade down. And I believe it was the Ringer, maybe Roger Sherman there, pointed out that since basically Mayock has come aboard, and I guess with Gruden, they've drafted it, their first-round players have all been players who played in the college football playoff and have come from, like, Alabama, Ohio State, or Clemson. So, you know, that, like, yes, on the one hand, those are two, three of the best programs in college football. They have great players. There's a reason they're playing in the playoff. But there's other good players that also don't play in the college football playoff. And it really seems like, I don't know, the Raiders just focus in on these major program guys, or I don't know. That seems like the only way to really explain Leatherwood. Because like you said, he could have success in the NFL, and you don't want to bet against Alabama guys. But it did seem by all accounts to be a reach, you know. Christian Darrisaw, I believe, was still on the board, and the Vikings had traded down and then were able to snag him with one of their first-round picks. And he was pretty universally considered a better prospect by most people than Alex Leatherwood. So, I don't know. It just seems like the Raiders have, I don't want to say they're a mess, but they certainly have a strategy, we'll say, when it comes to the draft, and that's becoming pretty noticeable.
Yeah, it's not have cable, and so only watch the games that are on ABC. It makes no sense to me. I will say, what I find the funniest about all of this is, remember when Mike Mayock was like the draft guy? Yeah. Like he made it, he did the one mock a year, he did like the one draft call that everybody had to be on, all the reporters had to be on. And he was seen as this expert, and now he just seems like an absolute dope every single time with these first-round picks. To his credit, though, and I saw this a lot, so this is not an original thought by any stretch of the imagination, but they did get Trayvon Morrig in the second round, somebody that we had mocked to the Ravens going. And a lot of people made the joke, or the observation, I should say. If those picks were flipped, people are talking about this is a good draft for the Raiders. So maybe it is. We'll see. They still probably could have traded down and gotten more picks, though.
So let's talk a little bit about our mock then. The results of what happened and what we thought would happen. Nailed picks 1 through 5. I think for a second there, we thought, you know, the dream was alive for the Cinderella run of correct picks. We ended up getting those first 5. We nailed 21 with Quiddy Pay to the Colts. I mean, this annoys me, but with 24 all over it, Najee Harris to the Steelers, the Ravens pick with Rashad Bateman, Greg Russo to the Bills at 30. And then we got the right position, but a different player for pick 8, 13, 17, 28, and 29. So I'm pretty impressed for how difficult these things can be. 14 of our top 16 drafted players were drafted in the top 16. So we had 2 guys basically in our mock who did not end up going in the top 16. So I'm pretty pleased with it. And maybe one of them should have, because we had Christian Darrisaw at 13. And he was apparently not close to being considered at 17, but he went 23. And then we had Owusu Koramoah at 15, and he fell all the way to 52. So guys, just some closing thoughts here on how our mock shaped up compared to how that first round went.
I'm really impressed, and I hate that JOK went to the Browns.
That was the most frustrating moment of day 2, I'd say, was the Browns getting him. Because he just adds, you know, they take, I believe it was Greg Newsome in the first round, and then to just add another seemingly great defensive piece, he was the guy, basically. Everyone was like, wow, I can't believe this guy slid this far. And then just for your division rival to pick up 2 nice defensive play pieces and – They get John Johnson and Troy Hill in free agency as well. I know we've talked about it, but the Browns are building something good. And kind of for them, it all comes down to how good is Baker Mayfield, kind of. So that'll be interesting.
Oh, so we're fine.
Yeah. I hope the answer is bad. As it comes to our mock, I think the real wrinkle, you kind of said it, we had the right pick at 8, but I feel like J.C. Horn going there kind of threw everything off, because then the Broncos take Patrick Surtain, and then the Cowboys, who we assumed would take one of Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn because they need secondary help, were kind of, left kind of just waiting at the altar, I guess you could say, in terms of secondary help. So that kind of – the J.C. Horn pick by the Panthers, I think, kind of is where fully our mock went off the rails a little bit. But, you know, that's what makes the draft exciting. You never really know what – I didn't see many people with – you know, not a lot of mock with J.C. Horn to the Panthers at 8. So I don't fault us for that.
I was going to bring up Mac Jones going at 15 and getting 30 seconds on, do we like this for the Patriots, or will Bill Belichick having an accurate pocket passer end up being more annoying than we want it to be?
I've gone back and forth so many times that I really can't offer an opinion. I don't know. Something about, and I didn't know this until today as we record this, actually, it is Ernie Adams' last season with the Patriots. Ernie Adams, if you don't know, is probably the most underrated person in terms of importance in this Patriots dynasty. He kind of does everything for them. Also cheats, which we should definitely, you know, keep in there as well. But nobody wants to talk about that because he's such a great, upstanding guy. But that part of it, and again, weird sports superstitious thing, you know, Ozzie's last draft is Lamar. I'm not saying it's that, but like Ernie Adams last draft and they go with Mac Jones, who's just sitting there and then walks out with the Bill Belichick Terminator walk. It's like, oh God, here we go. Like, this is going to be a problem. But that being said, I'm not overly terrified yet. We'll put it that way.
What annoys me is I think the team he's going to, because I think the Patriots can get probably the most out of Mac Jones or close to it, as good as any team. I still think Josh McDaniels is a pretty solid offensive mind. They obviously just won 3 Super Bowls fairly recently. So I think they could find some success with him. And I think as far as the Cam Newton side of things, I think he's just had too many injuries. Cause obviously I think Cam Newton's a better football player than Mac Jones. But I think at this point in their lives, Mac might just give them a better option, cause he can just simply throw it farther and probably more accurate than Cam can at this point.
Not into the ground,
yeah.
5 yards in front of all of his wide receivers.
Yeah, so I really don't know what to expect. I feel like Mac Jones might have the widest variance of any guy in this draft. He could be like a Pro Bowl level player, or he might just crash and burn real quick. But I mean, I think it's nice for the Patriots that they didn't have to trade up or trade down, just kind of sat tight and let a guy fall to them. And they got one of the first round QB locks and didn't have to, you know, like the Texans talk themselves into Davis Mills in the second round, or, you know, the Bucks take Kyle Trask, which I like a little more. It's just a developmental thing. But yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what to expect from it. So that'll make it interesting going forward here.
All right. The last thing to do here really is read over this random Raven again, and then I'll give my co-hosts one last statement on the Ravens draft class and just how successful we hope it will be. But first, for the random Raven, this player was on the team for parts of 3 seasons, 2017, 18, and then part of 2019. He was drafted by the Ravens out of Alabama in the 3rd round after totaling 18.5 sacks and 27.5 tackles for loss in his last 2 seasons at Bama and winning a national championship along the way. With the Ravens, he was not able to replicate the same success, playing in only 19 games over those 3 seasons, totaling 16 tackles and 2 sacks. He finished 2019 with the Green Bay Packers and is currently playing for Saskatchewan in the Canadian Football League. That's right. He wore the same number as random Raven legend Josh Bynes. Who is this random Raven?
So I definitely know, Jace. So do you want to take a stab?
I think I have it as well. So I can guess. I believe this is Tim Williams.
It's definitely Tim Williams.
Okay. Yeah.
This is Tim Williams. That's true. A random Raven who had 19 games with the Ravens and 18.5 sacks in 2 years with Alabama. And that's one of those picks that just didn't really work out. A third rounder, a rusher.
He was so good at the time. I loved it at the time because he was awesome at Alabama.
But yeah, that is the random Raven. We'll slot him in the lineup deep on the depth chart of defensive players because there are some better guys in there. But yeah, that's it for us. Guys, final thoughts. The Ravens, picks, Rashad Bateman, OA, Cleveland. what do you think of this draft overall? And how do you think it'll pan out?
I look, it's so hard to grade these things now. I think it's going to work out great. I think especially with the first 2 picks, Bateman and Oway, a lot depends on coaching. 1, offensively, changing the identity just a little bit. And 2, defensively, being able to fit an athlete into that system to help him thrive as much as possible, especially early. But you look at guys like Sean Wade late. You look at getting a fullback replacement late, who again looks like a stud fullback for a guy that is very important for this team. It sounds stupid, but Ricard is an important player for this run game. You know, Tylan Wallace is a guy people love. I already said my piece about Ben Cleveland. I don't have to keep going. I think it was overall great. I do want to mention one thing that we didn't bring up on this podcast. And if people are shouting at us, I don't think you want to hear it anyway. You can go to literally any other sports podcast or ESPN or NFL Network, what have you, to hear about Aaron Rodgers. It looks like Aaron Rodgers is not going to be playing in Green Bay. Who knows? That will develop. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I just wanted to throw a mention in there. Guys, we know it's a thing. We understand. We know. We just had to spend so much time waxing poetic about Eric DaCosta again that we didn't have time for it today.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But, As in terms of the Ravens draft, I am very pleased with it. I think, you know, it's hard to think back of how I felt in the moment. I think on the whole, I'm more pleased with this class than I was with last year's kind of haul, even though there was some highlights. You know, J.K. Dobbins is obviously looks like a great player, and Patrick Queen, I think, solid. But I think just this year they addressed so they hit so many areas of need, but also I think did some interesting things by taking guys with kind of some high ceilings, guys like, or like who have a lot of potential. Your Brandon Stevens, Owes. And so I think just that kind of philosophy of just a lot of athletic freaks this year, it seems like, you know, Ben Cleveland and an athletic freak the other way, just his size. So I think taking the emphasis on athleticism, taking big school guys and kind of hitting the areas of need, I found it all very interesting, but I come away pretty pleased. I think, especially Rashad Bateman, I think they get some players that are going to help and day one and in areas of need. So I'm excited to see them on the field. I hope we get some semblance of a preseason this year. That would obviously be nice for rookies to have since they didn't last year. I don't know actually, honestly, where they stand on that at this point. But yeah, I'm just excited to get these guys in and sort of hopefully get a more normal than usual, or than certainly than last year, offseason process to help them hit the ground running day one.
The thing that happened after the draft and the days after, something I forget every year, and you have your team get exciting players and then you want to see them play, but you don't really see anything for months. And I don't like that. I want it to be August now. I want to be rolling into this Ravens season.
Yeah, we haven't even really seen them like wearing Ravens uniforms even yet.
Just the Photoshopped versions of, right. So that's, I'm ready just to see these guys now. I'm excited about it. And it should be an awesome season with Jace, as you mentioned, some needs filled in the first few rounds and even in the later rounds, and then depth elsewhere. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're back on our every other week schedule here on Pod Like a Raven until we get closer to some of the summer workouts and stuff. Excited to talk about future NFL news. Hopefully, maybe we'll have a few additions to talk about on this Ravens roster by then, with free agent signings now not counting against comp picks. So we're looking forward to bringing all that for you. For Tim Horsey and Jace Evans, I'm Antonio Barbera. Thank you for listening to Pod Like a Raven. We will be back in 2 weeks.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.